Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io. And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here with Matt Watson, hoping to have another conversation. I'm hoping helps your business grow. Hi, Matt.
Hey, what's going on?
Trying to get a plan together.
Well, this is episode 9 of 52. So far, that plan is going well. Every week, we've got an awesome new episode about starting a startup.
Yeah, and speaking of starting a startup, we started a TV show that is also a startup. So if you're really into all things startup, come check out Startup Hustle TV. It's also a good time to let you know that today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. That's what we do. That's my day job, Matt.
Can you believe that StackFi has been using Fullscale for 3 years?
Yeah, I was talking to another one of our clients last night about that same thing. I was like, do you know you're coming up on your third three-year birthday?
Yeah.
He was like, wow, has it been that long? And I was like, yeah, man, we're getting old.
Yeah, we got some critical team members that have been working for us for 3 years now. StackFi.
They're veterans at this point.
Yeah.
They got a lot of flight hours under their wings. So,
yep.
Part of that whole thing, Matt, is part of the business plan that you and I created when we started Fullscale, and then was also a big pivot from the original business plan that we became partners in and around that essentially turned into Fullscale.
Yep.
But wait, things don't always go as planned.
Nope. Sometimes you keep turning over rocks and you find something under a rock that leads you a different path. So
kind of like the gold mining shows that I like to watch. If you wash enough dirt, you might find enough gold. But one thing on those shows as well that's pretty certain is things usually don't go according to plan, because the wash plant blows up, or the backhoe breaks down, or the excavator gets stuck in mud. And that sounds a lot like running a business. And also, one of the things that makes it really hard to write a business plan. Now, for those of you that are listening, if you've been a regular listener for a while, you know that Matt and I are not massive business plan people. Is that fair to say, Matt?
I think the shorter, the better, right? I mean, I think it's good to have a plan. I mean, I think it's really good to know who your customer is and what your product is and your go-to-market strategy. Like, all those things are really important. I just don't think it needs to be a 100-page novel.
Well, the reason for that is because you don't know what you don't know, and you don't know what's going to happen. So your business plan should be centric around it's almost kind of talking out what can or could occur, which is very helpful in your planning process, because if you've addressed it and thought about it and had a little bit of time to discuss it and keep revisiting it, that could be important. Now, Matt, I actually have the definition of a business plan. Would you like me to tell you what that is?
To jump and build wings.
No, that is not a plan.
No.
No,
that's your version of it.
Hope is not a strategy. As that, yeah. So a business plan is a written document that describes in detail how a business, usually a startup, defines its objectives and how it is to go about achieving its results. It lays out a written roadmap for the business with everything from marketing, financial, and operational standpoint. So we're going to talk about some tips that go with that. Now, I think a lot of people, as you mentioned, create this really comprehensive business plan, and they get so immersed and sucked into it that it can take some focus away from some of the other things that the business needs to do. Where do you draw the line, Matt? Like, do you draw the line?
It's one of the things we talk about a lot, right? You always talk about the guy who's cleaning the restaurant and never opens the door because he's polishing the floors, right? Like, you can spend forever refining the business plan, or you can make something like half-ass and figure out if somebody wants to buy it and figure out why not, and then improve it. At some point in time, you got to go sell something. So,
yeah. And I think a lot of people get in the weeds, and I've been guilty of this before with the business plan, because they think that your earliest stage investors are going to want to see that 60-page business plan right away. And I've really over time have learned that that's the opposite of the truth. A business plan can come in a lot of different shapes and forms, and there are pieces and parts of it that are best to put under your arm and take out to the initial pitch meetings. So do you consider a one pager to be part of a business plan, or is that a completely different thing?
I mean, I think that should be part of the like summary of it. As an investor, well,
you have an executive summary.
Yep.
That's the big brother of the one pager. And I want to talk about those two, because I think that both of those are birthed from your general plan. So a one pager, look, if you can't describe the problem, solution, and benefits of what you're doing and what you're solving on the front of one piece of paper, you've probably overcomplicated it. Doesn't mean you have to like lay out the world's greatest strategy, but the one pager is a component of your business plan. That's what an investor wants to see up front.
I mean, as an investor, I just want to know, like, you have a product, you know who you're going to sell it to, you know the people want to buy it, and I have confidence in that, and I have confidence in you. All the rest of it is a bunch of shit I don't want to hear about.
Well, and then the next step up from that, which is, I still believe, an ancillary part of a business plan, is an executive summary, which is the 60-page business plan condensed down to, I'd say, 3 to 6 pages max. That's really the highlight reel. Those are the two things, I think, if we're talking about how to start a tech company, if I was starting another company, which I have no plans to do anytime soon because of this kind of stuff is draining. It really is draining. But I spend time on the one pager and the executive summary. And then certain parts of the business plan, I think, are crucial for a greater understanding. We'll get into that. Like, if you had to redo a business plan, if you had 100% of your effort, where would you divide that up?
I mean, I think the executive summary is good. I think that kind of 3 to 5, 10 pages or whatever, and, you know, short and sweet on the different points, I think is good. And then how do you distill that down to one page is even better. I think as an investor, nobody's going to read more than 5 to 10 pages of stuff anyways. There's just no way.
Yeah. And there's reasons for that. And I think it's important to understand, because once again, and these are tips for a business plan, because that is what a lot of people want to get other people's attention with. But a lot of times the people that you're serving this plan to, like, hey, look at this, do you want to be a part of this? Well, first off, they're in and around organizations or situations where they get a lot of business plans and they just don't have time. Like,
no,
I mean, VCs and the investors, they just don't care. They're just
if I was looking at the business plan for Full Scale and it was 100 pages about Filipino law and HR standards and how we hire people and pay them and blah, like, I would get lost so fast and like all the, like, it's just too into the weeds. Like, okay,
yeah,
we're going to make money. Yes. Like, at some point it's just too much detail. I don't understand the industry. I can't relate to what you're even trying to tell me.
Well, a confused mind almost always says no. And that's just psychology. So you got to keep it simple. Now, When it comes to the business plan itself, though, there are areas of it that, you know, there are some priority areas. And I think when you look at the plan, remember, look, a good business solves a problem. So you have a problem, you have a solution. What kind of action are you going to take? And what is your desired or expected outcome? And look, it's going to flex different ways, but we're going to keep this tech centric because this isn't a series about how to start a tech company. So what's the problem you solve? Why is it valuable? Who are your competitors? How are you going to solve the problem? And you know, what's your path to revenue? Those are the simple areas. And, I think people get stuck wanting to write like 42 pages about features.
No, yeah, exactly. It's too into the weeds. And the most important thing in any business plan for a tech startup is just knowing who your target market is, right? Are you trying to sell to 1 million people that are all going to pay you $10 a month? Or do you want to sell it to 10 people that are going to pay you $1 million a month? Because those are completely different business strategies. And if your answer is both, you just are clueless. You have no idea what you're doing.
Yeah. And that's defining where you're at now. You know, within your, now that we're into the list of tips, I mean, get clear on your selling points, like make those crystal clear. Like those shouldn't be muddied. They shouldn't be hazy. Like, this is what we do. This is who we do it for. And this is how they're going to pay us. And the selling points.
And why benefit. We're 10 times better than the competitor. Like, it better be like,
I was
10
actually,
times better.
I was actually recording an episode with a founder that had 4 successful exits and a current company that had $65 million in funding. And he was talking about exactly that. He said, if your solution's only 30 to 50% better than the competition, you're going to lose. Cause it's kind of like you're always saying, like, what's the big benefit of switching over and doing something different? He was saying you need to be 2 to 3 times better, faster, or cheaper,
yeah,
to unwedge people from other solutions they're already into.
Especially if you're talking about a big brand that owns a specific industry, right? Like, it's just really difficult to replace them because they've got the name, and it's just that it's so much more difficult. Now, if you're in an industry where there's a lot of players and nobody really owns the market, and you know, there's not a dominant company, then you might be able to look okay. But if there's a really dominant player and everybody buys them because they're the safe choice and everybody knows that's the product to use, it's going to be really hard to supplant them unless you are significantly better.
So with your plan, it's also important to understand who your potential audience is. Is this a plan? Because a plan that I'm going to give to my employees internally is going to be different than the plan that I gave to a potential investor that I turned down $1 million from, which you can see my reaction to that in episode 1 or episode 0 of Startup Hustle TV. You want to see what it's like to not get $1 million? Watch that show. But that was a different plan. So knowing your audience and who you're delivering it to. So a business plan can take different forms. Like, there's actionable strategy that occurs within your business. And then there's a business plan. Those can be different.
Another example of this would be the business plan I'm going to take to a VC is probably going to have a shooting for the moon and being like $1 trillion company. The business plan I take to the bank might be more conservative.
Yeah. Right, right, right. And you know, that's, I mean, you got to know your audience.
Yep.
And I mean, that's important. So, Matt, do you want to explain unit economics, or would you like me to attempt to do that?
Well, how about we talk about unit economics for Stackify, which is a tech company? And what if we talk about it for, say, Fullscale, which is a different kind of tech company, and how the unit economics work?
Now, before we get into that, I want to say that someone who's a personal mentor, investor, and maybe even hero of ours, Sandy Kemper, is huge. Like, if you talk to Sandy for 5 minutes about your business, he's going to say you need to be on top of what are your unit economics look like, you know, and that's kind of like if you talk to me, I'm like, what's your path to revenue? You're not going to get very far into that conversation before he's going to bring that up, and that's important. So go ahead, Matt.
Well, so when I think of unit economics, the big thing I really want to know is scale, right? How does this business scale? What does it cost to acquire a customer? How long are they a customer? You know, what is the churn and lifetime value of the customer, right? Like all of those things are really important. But then you get into your margins and cost of goods sold, right? Like, are you selling a product that you make an 80% profit on? Or are you like a grocery store and you're like, we make a 5% profit? Like those are totally different types of businesses, right? And most tech businesses, if they're SaaS-based subscription, usually are 70% or more gross profit. And the really good ones can be 90 plus. 70 to 80 is more normal. At Stackify, it used to be we were like 60% a couple years ago, and now we're probably more like 80%. So, you know, how much you spend on hosting and all that kind of stuff gets into that. But the big thing there too is customer acquisition costs. That's always the big one, is how much does it cost us to acquire a customer? And especially if you're going to go to a VC or investor and raise money, usually the reason you're raising money is to scale and grow sales, right? Like we want to go sign up a bunch of customers. So you need to have an idea of like, hey, I can go hire a couple salespeople, and what will I, you know, get from that? How much will I invest? What's the outcome? Or if it's marketing, like, oh, okay, we know we can market and do marketing and advertising in these ways, and this is how much it costs to acquire a customer. Understanding those levers is really important to investors.
Yeah, and so the difference, so we were going to compare Stackify, and by the way, so Gigabook would have a similar model. Software as a service or tech companies. No, because it'll be the same or similar. So Fullscale, which is a tech services company. So here's the difference. Like, we have one foot in the tech space and one foot in the service space. And it's not a true software company. So when we use the word scalable, it's completely different, because Stackify or Gigabook or a pure tech driven company, the reason that they trade for such big multiples and such big money pours in is because you can scale them. Well, most of the time can scale them without needing to have a gazillion more people.
Software always shows up to work.
Yes, it shows up every day, 24/7. So at Fullscale, where we deal with high aptitude, high experience developers, people ask me about our hiring strategy. I say, well, it's exactly inexact, because yeah. I can't make the right candidates show up and pass our gauntlet of a hiring procedure.
Yeah.
And so now, but on the flip side of that though, a company like Fullscale can be inherently easier to have a cash flow positive business.
Yep.
As opposed to software companies, which are dreadfully unprofitable for years and sometimes a decade or more, but yep, then they can springboard forward a lot of the ways. So there's a little bit of a give and take, and other things too, that, like, for example, at Fullscale, some of the, you talk about, so customer acquisition cost, who fucking knows, man? Like, I can take a guess at it, but we get customers from so many different things. Maybe this podcast, maybe Startup Hustle TV, maybe people we know, like the Fullscale website. And it comes from a lot of different angles and places. And it's also not very predictable. So when you're creating your financial model and your unit economics, like with Stackify, you have some idea. You're like, okay, if we spend $40,000 this month on X, Y, and Z, we expect to be within this range, this to this many trials, this to this many conversions. And it's fairly predictable. With companies like Fullscale, especially service-based, like that can sway wildly. Like, because we don't know. And some of it too is also different, because like software, it can be really hands-off. Like Fullscale, we say no to as many potential clients as we say yes to.
Right.
So there's a completely different thing there. So when it comes to the economics though, knowing how much you got to, basically, what do you got to do to pay your bills? Like, what does that look like? And then where does that make profit? So yeah. Anyway, fancy schmancy stuff there, Matt. So all right, so now why don't you get an idea about what some of this stuff looks like? And look, for the earliest stages of business, you don't know. you don't know what your real customer acquisition cost is. You don't know what your churn rate is. You don't know what the lifetime value of a client is. Like you just mentioned at the beginning of the show, Stackify has been a client at Full Scale for 3 years now.
Yep.
That means your every month that you pay your bill, that, and thank you for paying your bill every month, by the way. But every month that you do that, the lifetime value of your account grows.
The customer acquisition cost can be higher.
And we don't churn a whole lot of clients. So that grows every month. That number changes. But that said, that also means that a client's worth even that much more when more and more of them stick around and the longer they stay. So once you get an idea of, and that's another thing too. So you look at like, what's the average paying subscriber at Stackify spend roughly?
It's about $3,000 to $4,000 a year.
So $200-$300 a month, as opposed to Full Scale, the average client spends $13,000 a month.
Yep. Which could become totally different business models, sales plans, customer acquisition. Like I can't afford a lot of money to acquire a customer. You can.
Right, right. And at the same time, I have to build a relationship with a lot of those customers and clients because we're giving them advice, consulting, working with them, having them do interviews, talk to different people. Where, well, at Gigabook, man, ever since we invented our Smart Start onboarding, like we don't spend any time on that. It's a live chat at best. And that's scalable. That's scalable because if your business plan revolves on too much human intervention with your tech company, you're not scalable yet. You haven't figured it out. Because what'll happen is if your users go up by 1,000 and you have to hire 5 more people just to deal with that, well, you're still not going to make any money because you're just going to spend that hiring 5 more people. So where's that break point? Where is the point that you can either, and I refer to this as cash cowing. Because in some businesses, you see they refine a product. Well, let's look at Linktree, right? We use Linktree, a super simple link directory that we put in our social media ads that'll say, where do you want to listen to the podcast? Where do you want to find us? That's a product that doesn't need to evolve a whole lot. So you might see a ramp up to build something like that, and then they get into a maintenance mode. That's putting a cash cow out in the pasture.
Yep.
You know, and that's what can be attractive is you might not need many people at all, but you're going to have a very difficult time determining that up front unless you can get some kind of business intelligence about what is good in and around your industry.
Yep.
By the way, let's break a couple hearts because, you know, it wouldn't be a real episode of Startup Hustle if we didn't shatter at least one dream. For your tech company, so Matt, like realistically of free trials and SaaS environments, how many do you, what do you think a good conversion rate is?
Well, so it's all over the board, of course, right? From what we see, about a third of the people that sign up for free trial will ever actually use the product. The other two thirds, they never even use it. They just sign up for a trial. Okay. And then about a third of the ones that actually use it will buy it. So our end result of that is roughly kind of about
10%.
It kind of ranges, I'd say 8 to 12. And depending on your product, you know, it's going to vary wildly. But yeah, it's only 8 to 12%.
And Gigabook will be in an 8 to 12 range for the same reasons. And so that's the thing is, and this is where you can get yourself sideways in a hurry trying to start your tech company, is thinking that 40% of people are going to convert.
No.
Because honestly, in the beginning, if you even get a whole number, like 1% might be good. I bet back in the day,
game.
You were like, wow, we're up to 1% because your shit is not good or great right away. It's kind of the way it goes.
Yep.
So... all right. So once you get some idea around that, you can begin to break some of this stuff down into actionable goals. And I think that if your business plan doesn't have actionable items in it, it's just paper. It's like.
You got to have some milestones, right? Like our goal is V1 and then V2. And then in V3, we're going to create this whole new feature and thing and go into a different industry or market or whatever. Like, you know, you got to set out some milestones and the key thing to investors, a lot of times they expect you to have a big vision, right? Like they expect you to see forward about this is what we're going to be doing 5 years from now. We're going to build all these products. We're going to grow. We're going to go into this industry. What, you know, like most investors want to invest in people that have a big vision for an industry or the product or what they're going to do.
It's because they need big returns to support their own model. They're writing 10 checks, hoping that one of them actually goes big. And if they write 10 checks for a bunch of people with little dreams and little visions and little goals, then they will probably have a little return if they even have one. So that's that kind of, you know, aiming for substance, you know, like does your plan have substance? Do you have a marketable product? Do you have a systematic plan for increasing revenue? And maybe a mitigation strategy or a plan B for what can and will or could occur if the goals and milestones aren't met.
Well, and that's the hard part when you're early stage. It's a little bit of a game of chicken, right? It's like, okay, we got $50,000. We got to use this money to get to the first milestone. And once we reach the first milestone, we think we'll be able to raise another $50,000 or whatever. But if you screw up along the way and you don't get to that first milestone, you're just dead. You're done.
It's like implosion.
It's a little bit of a game of chicken because you're like, I've got to hurry up and spend all this money so I can get to that first goal. Like, I got to build the MVP. I got to spend a certain amount of money on marketing. I got to prove these unit economics. And then the investor agreed they'd give us more money if we approved all this stuff. You spend all the money, you hire people, and then you're like, oh shit, we didn't hit our numbers. What do we do now?
And that's why they're having a reasonable plan, but still being, you know, having a high upside. I think if your plan shows you hockey sticking after 6 months, that's not super believable. I mean, we were talking in previous episodes about not only Gigabook, but also at Stackify, it taking years to collect a dollar.
So I think there's two things there I would want to tell everybody to mention. Realistically, the like unicorn type growth is to do what they call triple, triple, double, double. So triple revenue 1 year, then triple again, then double revenue, then double revenue again. That is like unicorn status if you can do that and you have hit the hockey stick and you were growing like crazy. And that's probably not your first year, by the way, right? There could be a couple years of like R&D building some product and it's got all sorts of problems. And then you finally get it working. You've got product market fit. You got your go-to-market strategy. You finally figured out how to attract customers. Then you start that triple, triple, double, double, right? It doesn't start like the first year either. Like there could be a long way before you get there even. But then the other thing to think about is even once you become a successful company, growing 40 to 60% a year over year is super successful. Those people that think they've got to grow like triple revenue every year for like in perpetuity, that doesn't happen.
And that's going to change. By the way, when I hear you say triple, triple, double, double, I just think about me hooping.
Yep.
Said no one. All right. So, but reasonable goals and expectations, like I said, triple, triple, double, double. Think about that. Cause if you do the math on that, it gets pretty dirty in a hurry. Like these turn into big numbers. There's a reason it's not triple, triple, quadruple, quadruple. The bigger your revenue gets, the harder it is to build upon it have numbers and percentages that look flashy.
After we sold Venn Solutions to AutoTrader, I went to their board meeting, which was one of the coolest things I ever got to do with a couple billionaires in a room. That was cool. And their company charter was to grow 14% a year.
Yep.
I mean, at some point in time, you get to be so big, like say Apple or Microsoft or Amazon or somebody, they're not like, we're going to triple this year. Like, no.
Yeah. And that's the thing too. And sometimes we've even talked about this at Full Scale, like there even becomes an inflection point in some businesses where just growing for the sake of growing isn't always a great plan.
A lot of times after acquisitions.
I mean, there's just a lot of different, you know, now thinking big is important, as we mentioned. Now, look, when it comes to this plan that you've created, get some feedback. Talk to someone about it. Ask people you know to look at it. You know, email Watson and ask him to look at it because he loves long, detailed business plans. That's what you don't read books before bed. You read business plans, right?
Yes. Yep. That's what I do.
That's a lie. I don't think that's true. But, you know, when it comes to the feedback, I think it's important to listen for a few things. One, like, does the person that read it even get it? Like, does this make sense? Like, because if everyone that reads your plan's confused as shit by it, then it's not a great plan. And then also just like listen to see if everyone asks the exact same questions. Well, then there might be something worth addressing. That's that echo I'm always talking about. You hear it and that's what needs to be addressed. And then, you know, kind of for the final point on the tips list, before we talk about some things to avoid, is you, look, and your sophisticated, savvy investor knows this as well, but your plan's wrong. It's going to need to change. I'm more concerned about your ability to adapt, survive, and advance than I am about the crystal ball that you don't have.
Yeah, I mean, most of the time you're betting on the jockey, right? Like, I want to bet on a jockey that understands market conditions and can understand they need to pivot and move and figure out how to adapt and overcome, right? I mean, if you think that you got it all figured out and you know exactly what you're going to do, you can pretty much guarantee that's not going to work.
I think we need to get an actual professional horse race gambler on here and ask if they actually bet on the jockey or the horse.
I mean,
Because I know in our world it's the jockey.
I mean, I can tell you at Venn Solutions, what the business started out doing was nothing like what it became like 8 years later. Like the product changed. I mean, it built upon like a really simple idea, but the direction it went a different direction and became 100 times more complicated, right? And StackFi was the same thing. We started with a simple idea, and now what everybody wants is something that's kind of started on that, but went a different direction.
Yeah, well, and we were joking about this. You and I became business partners in Gigabook, and our original plan was to help Stackify build a development team. We put a small markup on it, and Gigabook wasn't going to have a burn rate. It was a beautiful little plan. It was a self-sufficient little nugget that was going to play well. And then we got 2 months into that, and because of this podcast and people we know and just a massive shortage of developers in North America, we had a bunch of people, our friends. It was literally our friends.
You're wrong. It was like 2 weeks later, and one of my friends had a developer working at Full Scale before I did.
Well, yes. Yes, it wasn't 2 weeks, but it was close because we had people asking right away. But at first you and I were like, we had that part. In the business plan that I wrote and the financial projections, which by the way, I think are the most important part of the plan to give you an idea, a real tangible view. So when it comes to that financial part of the business plan, I usually write 3 or 4 of them. I do like good, bad, and ugly. Yeah. You know, like, and so you just get an idea, like, and it's good to do those in triplicate, or in some places they'll do even more because like they'll move that timeline. Like, okay, in this one we get revenue in month 3, and this one we don't get revenue till month 12. Like, what does life look like? And those tables change really dramatically for a lot of things, both good and bad. So understand where you're going to be if things go well, understand where you're going to be if they don't go well at all, because that's how you determine what you actually need from an investor and where they need it. And no investor wants to come sit down at the table and immediately be the short stack. Investors don't typically write checks to companies that are immediately resource strapped even after taking in capital.
No, they expect you to take that money and invest it. So if you're already burning cash, that doesn't help grow unless you're growing really well. And
yeah,
you know, but.
So when we talk about expect the plan to change, you know, we were trying to build a team at Gigabook. We were trying to grow that product. We were going to staff Stackify. And then we had like anywhere from 12 to 18 months down the road. I just remember as general line items, future client teams.
Yeah.
And we thought about building it, but we didn't know what we didn't know at that point. Now we ended up, because the demand was so high, we ended up accelerating that part of the business a full year. We took Beta Client 1, Beta Client 2, and it was about 3 or 4 months into the whole thing that we were like, shit, this is what we should be focusing on. We, the software, the Gigabook side can kind of work. It can be in parallel, but we loved the fact that that business had the, meaning Full Scale, had the ability to pile up revenue so quickly.
Yep. Service-based businesses are great.
we were so fascinated with that because we had been in and around a world where we'd gone 2 or 3 years before you could even really have something that you were proud of selling, not sell, but proud of selling. And then at one point, so at the end of year one, we had 100 employees. And I remember even asking you, I said, Matt, have you ever been involved in a business that grew this quick? And you were like, no,
nope.
And, you know, but that wasn't all gravy and roses, was it?
No, and it had its own set of problems. And actually that leads to another big change in the plan is, you know, at Full Scale, we thought we were going to partially be in the real estate business. Yep. Like when you're hiring that many employees, you got to get office space all the time and all this stuff. Like we're going to end up owning like a building somewhere, a skyscraper somewhere. Right. And now here comes COVID and everybody.
We went for. Yeah. We went for. We have a whole floor of a building that we've paid for over a year now and never even used.
Yeah.
$20,000 a month. And now we don't even need it because we'll be fractional. Like our employees will come one day a week after COVID, and that's so they can just have some FaceTime and then they'll
work remote. Totally changed the plan and the financials, right?
It changed the whole business model. And get ready to adapt and change. All right.
Yep.
So let's talk about some don'ts. All right, look, when we say that we're not big planners and it's not our favorite thing to do, we're not saying to skip planning. Don't skip the planning phase. You need to plan. Just know that your plan's going to require adjustment.
And the plan doesn't necessarily have to be all in writing, right? Like, I mean, you have a plan. You're like, hey, this is what we're going to build. This is who the customer is. This is how we're going to attract customers. Like, we know these things. We talk about them every day. It doesn't necessarily have to be all in writing either, unless you're going to go present it to an investor or something.
Need to be in writing. Yeah. Then it does. But it doesn't have to be overly complex or overly sophisticated. And then much like we're just talking about, just because you wrote the plan, it shouldn't be static. Like we just told a story about literally starting a business that we didn't plan under the wings of it was 4 months later, we actually did make it its own entity, which then later acquired Gigabook.
Yep.
So, you just never know, but static is not a good place to be. Just like, I think people don't want to deviate from the plan. They're like, no, stay the course. No, someone's going to make adjustments to the whatever course you've plotted. I mean, because there's a storm in the way. All right, let's sail around it. So, all right. Don't lose focus on your cash.
Cash is king. Got to know how much money you have. You got to understand your burn rate, how many months you got till you run out of cash. It's all critical.
How do you validate your idea?
You got to talk to people. And the biggest mistake that all entrepreneurs make, and this is especially bad with tech companies, is you get software developers that sit in their basement and just write code, but they never actually go talk to a potential customer to figure out what it is they want to do. Or they overcomplicate it. And we've talked about this with Gigabook. It's like, we just kept adding all these features and stuff. And, you know, if we would have talked to more customers and thought about it, maybe we would have made a simpler product.
And meanwhile, simple ass Calendly was running away with the race. Like they really were. And they just did one thing. And like, I look back at that, I'm like, God, that was a strategic error. Because we even thought about doing the exact same thing, and they weren't even that great at it at that point. So,
part of that is it's easy to go to like your uncle or your uncle's best friend, and they're like, oh, yeah, this is the greatest idea ever. This is awesome. Yeah, great job, kid. Yeah, keep going. And then you talk to some real person who would actually be a customer that's not like your buddy's friend, and they're like, this is a stupid ass idea. Like, you got to get outside your little friend network, you got to go talk to strangers.
I mean, I think that's a key ingredient, you know, like, I mean, if you surround yourself with yes people, you need to be ready to hear the critical. I think a big thing to avoid is don't get defensive about the feedback that people give you. Thank them for the feedback. Thank you for the input. Thank you for your time. Because in reality, those people can choose to do anything else in the world besides give a shit about your plan and what you're doing. So like people ask me a lot to talk about this or look at this or do whatever. And I always disclaim it up front. I'm like, okay, two things. One, you can't get mad at me if I don't tell you what you want to hear. And two, I'm not going to argue with you about whether why I'm wrong and you're right. That's because those are pointless. That's not it. That's not what we're wanting to do here. If you want the input, take the fucking input and listen.
Yep.
Listen.
Take it under advisement.
Spongy, vague goals. Matt, I want to acquire 30 to 80% market share in 3 to 6 years.
We're going to be number one.
True.
Yeah. I have told my marketing team a couple times that we should just change our website to say we're number one at something, like just whatever. We're number one.
And there's ways to do that because you don't even have to say number one. And you're not.
No, we are. We're going to say it.
Become a bit of an expert on this messaging. But, you know, I mean, overall, you know, another thing too is well, you know, when it comes to your plan and what you're wanting to do, one size does not fit all. You know, one of the things, the reason I don't get to like all the shit that Full Scale does, Full Scale on Startup Hustle, Startup Hustle TV, Gigabook, a portion and six different portfolio companies. Like, what do we do? You know, that's the thing. It's like, you know, and on some, like, there's not a one size fits all plan for the stuff that we do overall or what we let ourselves do. So just because,
Well, and I was going to say the business plan of different kinds of tech companies, even if you're in the same industry, doesn't mean your business plan is the same, right? Like take Uber and Lyft for an example. Their business plans could be different. Uber could be like, oh, we want to partner with these types of people and that's our go-to-market strategy and we want to deliver food. And Lyft is like, shit, we don't ever want to do that, but we want to do this other thing, right? Like everybody's going to have a unique business plan.
Yeah. And you know, with that, there's priorities in there. And this next tip that we have, I think is the most crucial thing for early stage companies. Do not dilute your priorities. You need to be good at one, maybe two things before you try to be good at six. Like, and I've made this mistake. I'm sure you have, Matt. Yep. Like pick something to be aces at, the most important thing. And that's something that drives users or revenue to your platform. Right. It's never vanity shit. It's like always like you like to now. How do you like what talk about a you love boring businesses?
I do.
So why?
Because they just make money and people need them. They're a utility. Like I can't remember the name of the one here in that's Kansas City that like they just help people optimize how they deliver freight and the optimal route. It's not sexy, but.
Quote? Freight
no,
quote?
It was like,
or, no, that was my buddy, Jeff Auslander.
Yes.
And of course I just forgot the name of his business, but it was, it's a logistics company.
Yeah. Nothing sexy about it.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you would never know that it exists, but they're killing it and making a ton of money.
Good at one thing.
Yeah.
That one thing. And they're freaking aces at it though. Same thing. It's like, we've used this example of the Chicken Fingers restaurant. Here in Kansas City.
Yes.
They just make chicken fingers. That's it. But God, they are good. They are good. There's always 10 cars deep in that line, man. And they make chicken fingers. It's like, what kind of chicken fingers do you want? Or it's actually more like, how many do you want? Do you want fries or coleslaw and lemonade?
That's the greatest example, right? Like you can think about like, I'm hungry. And you think of like a million restaurants to go to. But if you think about I'm hungry and I want chicken fingers, you're like, oh, there's only one logical choice. We're going there. Yep. Why would I go to McDonald's for chicken fingers when I can go to so-and-so and that's what they do?
Well, that's exactly what McDonald's did when they first became a franchise. And this was before Ray Kroc and, you know, the McDonald brothers, they said, we make all of our money off of hamburgers, fries, and shakes. And they looked at each other and they said, well, why do we even do the rest of this? They said, well, we want a full menu. Do we even need to have one? And they kind of look at each other like, we can do whatever we want. We own the place.
Yeah.
So there they go. They took all the other crap out and they got real good at a couple things. Our buddy, Lyril Holt, back in episode 12, will talk about being cowardly and taking an idea that no one else is doing and going somewhere where everyone will leave you alone to get real good at it.
Yep.
I love that approach.
And one of my favorite sayings, and I think I picked this up from my friend Craig that worked for me. And if people listening to this only remember one thing from this podcast, it's this. Every time you say yes to something, you're saying no to everything else. And so you can't say yes to everything. You cannot do all the things. You can do one thing and you're not doing all the rest of them. You don't have enough time to do all of them.
Yeah, and that's also a roundabout way of beginning to describe opportunity cost. In one of the five colleges that I dropped out of, which this one was the top 10 business school, so I want a little bit of cred on that one. They drove that into our head. So opportunity cost is the value of the foregone option, right? And here's the thing is, there's not necessarily a right or wrong, because Matt, so by choosing to be on this podcast, we're choosing to not do a bunch of other shit, some of which could be playing with my kids.
Yep.
Like, I can't really put a tangible like spreadsheet value on that, but I'm not doing that because I'm doing this. And it's the same thing when it comes to your priorities and what you're building at the business. If you're trying to build seven things, you're going to probably at the same time, before you're good at any of them, you're probably going to end up with three things that are average and four that never get finished because you run out of money or something. Yep. Or just, it's the way it goes. Okay. So here's another thing that I really don't like when I've seen a lot of people's business plans is all of a sudden here comes year three and there's the hockey stick on the graph, but there's not a real why. Like, why? Like, what are you doing different at that point? What part of, like, what made that occur? Why is this? Why did you just suddenly begin the triple, triple, double, double phase?
You know, as an investor, I kind of like those if they make a performance base. It's like, hey, if you don't hit those numbers, I own 100% of the company. Because I would own 100% of all of them. Every one of them.
A lot of companies. Yeah, you got to own a lot of companies.
Nobody hits any of those numbers.
Right.
Every and that's, forecast I've ever done, including Stackify and Full Scale, we've never hit any of the numbers.
Nope. And then sometimes we grossly outpace them and sometimes we underwhelm. But you just never know. And it's hard to say. So no one knows, but don't paint yourself in the corner. And some of that just looks unrealistic. You know, if I'm like, at Gigabook, we'll have 28% of the entire booking market in 3 years. No, we won't. It's freaking huge. There's like a billion people out there in that market. Like, I'm not going to have 280 million users in 3 years. I'm not. I mean, maybe if someone gives us $10 billion to buy the market. Okay. So this last tip, not paying attention to the plan. This is goofy, dumb shit. Like, ugly typos, terrible formatting. Like, you spent all this time to put this thing together, proofread it.
Well, I think also then not following it. You're like, okay, we decided we're going to do this. We're going to sell this. We're going to sell it to these people. And then you meddle around and do everything else. You're like, no, now we decided to do this and we're going to try to sell it to somebody else. And then, oh, one customer called and they want us to do this thing. So now we're going to go meddle around with that thing somewhere.
Now we've pivoted.
And you've not focused on the plan.
So, Matt, I asked the Startup Hustle Facebook group a question phrased as, how much of your original business plan was accurate? So I got 28 votes for 1 to 33%. That won in a landslide.
It's about half the votes.
It was more than half of the votes.
Yep.
It was actually 2/3 of the votes, because 28 votes for 1 to 33%. A couple comments were in there. Let's move on. So 14 votes for 71 to 90%. I believe that 13 of those people are wrong about that assessment.
Lying.
Probably. Yeah, maybe. 11 votes for 34 to 70%. Now I can buy that range pretty easily.
Now hold on,
I can get into that.
They're not lying. They just haven't been in business long enough to realize that it was wrong. Yes.
Yeah. Yep. And then 2 votes for 0%.
They know what's
zero, up. Zero votes, zero for 90% plus. Overall, that's a pretty self-aware voting populace, in my opinion. Yeah. And you know, like, I'm not buying the whole, as you hear my GoPro turn itself off. And yes, I use that to help us with Startup Hustle TV. Sorry, I'm always talking to people about turning noisy things off. So yeah, but those are people that group, and come check us out. Like, I know there's a lot of really experienced, savvy entrepreneurs in there. So, I mean, I think really in the end, Matt, is the conclusion that you have a, air quotes, slightly better chance of being successful if you create a business plan?
I mean, there's a diminishing return, right? Everybody should have a business plan. They should know who their customer is, the go-to-market strategy, the product. What is the long-term vision? Like, we want to sell X to Y. And the most important thing is staying on that plan or deciding that you're going to change plan, but not doing both. And just having a plan. One step at a time, you know?
I think the plan's good, but the business plan, as we know it. So I'm going to go first on the as we close this out, Matt. I think overall, I think we were pretty clear with the message here today. Like, I think the plan is more important for you and your team. I like the know your audience part of this for the tips, like what you're taking to the bank, what you're taking to an investor, and what you're taking to your internal team are going to have variances, right? Like, they really are. I mean, just know your audience. I think the more and more experience I get as an investor, as an entrepreneur, all of it is, I just really love simplicity. Like, yes. Make it like present it to me as if I'm a small child or maybe a Labrador retriever. You know, and just like, I really don't want to listen to the 19th minute about features and bullshit. Like, what do you do? How do you do it? Why are you different? And how are you going to compete? What are your takeaways, Master Watson?
I think the most important thing is identifying a unique problem. You know, if you're a tech company, you got to identify a unique problem and you got to solve it better than anybody else. Being a me too is not a solution. Unless you're targeting a different audience, right? You'd be like, okay, we're going to create an accounting system, but it's for a specific industry. So we don't really compete with QuickBooks, right? We only focus on a specific industry or whatever, a specific niche, right? That's fine. But you got to do something unique, and you got to do it better than everybody else. And you got to know how to find your customers. You got to know what your go-to-market strategy is, how to reach them. Are you going to sell something for $10 a month or $1,000 a month? Completely different business models. Those are the really simple things you got to understand as an investor. I definitely want to understand those things.
Speaking of understanding things, Matt, you were amazing in Startup Hustle TV, all of the recent episodes. You letting everyone know that a great salesperson is good at picking up girls. Man, I got a lot of fun comments about that. Now, I don't know if you've watched episode 5.0, but I actually did leave the part in there where I said my butt hurts because I had been sitting on the plastic interview chair for 2 hours. So if you're interested in seeing the real look of what it's like to figure out how to make our own TV show, a video version of the Startup Hustle podcast, it's there on YouTube. We're having fun with it. If you want to get involved, go to startuphustle.xyz. Today's episode of the show was brought to you by Fullscale.io. Look, if you're trying to build a tech company, you need people to build the technology. That's what we can help you with. We did and built everything about Fullscale using ourselves as clients. Fair to say, Matt?
Yep, for 3 years.
We took all of the shit that people don't like about building tech teams, and we kind of just did the opposite. It was that part of the plan was pretty simple. We asked our potential clients, what do you hate about hiring developers? So we did the opposite.
Yeah.
And then we asked our employees, what do you not like about where you work? And we did the opposite of that.
Yep.
It was simply elegant. So, Matt, next week, part 10. You know, one other thing before we go here. We didn't plan. We made this a 52-part series and then started in the third week of January. Are we going to have to pivot?
I don't know. Did we double up? Is there going to be a bonus week somewhere?
Triple, double, double, baby. Just like me on the court, dude. I want you just think of me with like a Lakers jersey on, me and LeBron. He's just throwing it up. I'm just slamming it home. Yeah, that didn't happen either. I'm going to get back to having fantasies somewhere else other than on the air, Matt. I'll see you next week.
See ya.
Startup Hustle's brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.